It's the Tiltcast, episode 619, I'm Not a Magician.
This week, guys, we talk a little bit more Oblivion Remake, some Expedition 33, and
Dead Zone Rogue. Stay tuned. And we're back.
Woohoo!
It is yet another...
It's the dual cast.
Yeah, it is. It is May 10th at 7:39 p.m. This is an M-rated show. I'm Nos.
I'm Jason.
And there is no Rusty this week. But together we get about 30 minutes of bullshit.
Bullshit.
Some games, some news. Not really our place to say. Rusty had some pretty severe tragedy in his family, and he is dealing with that. And we will hold the spot when he gets back. So for a little while, it's going to be me and Jason. And maybe a guest or two. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, we'll try to figure something out, but yeah. And it's an extremely busy Jason. So you're not going to hear much from me about games. I had pretty hectic week at work, but I will say, couple of funny things.
What do you mean by that?
Well, so I will say I've got a couple things that happened that were pretty humorous, though. Like my, we went to the gym the other day, and my, middle kid, she's trying to work on a treadmill, and apparently the treadmill had no power, so like she hit the button to start the treadmill, but the treadmill didn't start, but she was like still trying to walk, and like she's like pushing the treadmill band around. You know, and she's like, "Dad, why is this so hard?" I'm like, "Because it's not on."
She was just
it's a whole lot easier when it's plugged in. She's like, "It's not unplugged." I said, "Yes, it is. Look down there." Sure enough, somebody, I guess, had tripped over a cord or something and unplugged the damn treadmill.
Just pushing that track, huh?
And I mean, I was more surprised she was pushing the track because, like, she's barely 5 feet tall, and weighs all of like 74 pounds. So
this is a younger kid, then, isn't it?
No, this is my middle child. She's just very petite.
But she's that's not your oldest child.
No. So
I say 74 pounds is tiny.
That was hilarious. And then same kid, we're working this morning, starting to clean out the pool. So like I didn't take the pool completely down. We basically like just took the legs out of it and like tarp covered it for the winter. Which means I gotta clean it up, right? And some water, you know, like rainwater and stuff collected in it. So we've got to drain what little rainwater there is in it out and like clean up, what acorns and stuff fell into it. And so we're doing all that. And as I'm like lifting the liner to move the water towards one edge to drain it out, she decides she's going to, get in there and try sweeping the acorns off the liner as I'm draining the water. And I go lift the liner and just plop her face down in that dirty ass fucking water.
Oh, that shit's disgusting.
She looked back at me like I had killed her. And she actually said, she looks at me and she goes, "Dad, you're giving me dysentery."
Surprised you know what that was.
I mean, she's in fifth grade. It's not like they haven't, you know, learned some of that stuff, right? But I just thought it was funny she thought to say it. But yeah, like those two events are like the most exciting thing happened to me all week. I didn't even get a chance to really load up Oblivion or even what's that new one that came out on Game Pass at the same time? That
Expedition 33.
Yes.
One of the best RPGs of the year is on Game Pass. I've
not had a chance to touch them. So.
That's sad, man.
It is sad. It is really sad. So hopefully by next week, I've had a chance to touch them. Most gaming I actually got to do was a couple of Beat Sabers, I think. And that was just to make up for cardio I was missing.
Yeah, I've been... actually haven't been busy with a lot of photo work recently. I've been scoping out. So I have a shoot I'm doing for an album shoot, and I was looking for a studio. There's one studio I've rented in town that's like $75 an hour, and they range from 50 for, which is a pretty basic studio, an hour, and all of them are a minimum of 2 hours, to about $300 an hour. A $300 one, an hour one has its own backdrops, which is nice, but I have backdrops. So that one doesn't make much sense because I'd have to be making, I'd have to shoot there. Shit, for 2 hours, I better be getting paid like some crazy good money. Like it's almost not worth it.
Yeah.
And at that level, I'd have to be like super pro. But thankfully I've got a lot of photography friends in town and I was asking for recommendations. There's a place in town called Wampa. And it is it's a bunch of old converted warehouses that have been renovated into spaces for rent and spaces for photo shoots. When I say renovated, like every little nook is kind of like its own theme. So like there's a bunch of like vintage furniture in there. There's like a whole hall of mirrors. There's all these like empty spaces where I can set up, you know, backdrops that are also angled correctly for when the sun is around. So you don't get direct sunlight, which is good for photos because none of the windows face the direction the sun's climbing throughout the day. Or it does, if I was to shoot in the morning, it would, but if I'm shooting in the afternoon, none of them face that direction, so that I'm not going to get that sunlight. They've got like an empty air, like warehouse or whatever, which is really neat. They've got a huge warehouse, the big ass boat in it. They've got a building that's been completely demoed all the way inside out. It is nothing but a concrete floor on top of another slab of concrete with a bunch of like knocked out brick and everything else. And everything has power. It's $100 a month. So the deal that I made with the people that I'm shooting photos for is that they can pay for my studio space. And then tip me if they want, and they always tip, so I'm not really worried about that. These guys routinely usually pay me about $300 a shoot, and for my live stuff, they always give me like $150. But they're all like, it's not starving artist musicians. These guys all have real jobs, right? So they all band together, and it's an investment in what they're doing. And they treat it as such, right. they get good people, right? But they get me, and then they got a guy that's a real artist working on their album art. So I took one of the main guy that's in that band out there and went and looked, and I was like, "Do you think this is going to work?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, this is definitely going to work." He does a lot of video work, so we've got some cool ideas for some very, very Cthulhu-inspired shoots. Not that they're going to dress like that, but I'm going to light it with a bunch of red and green reflections. And we're going to do it in the middle of the night, which will be kind of fun. Because I'll have 24/7 access. So, I've already got that planned out. That's later in the month. I've got, if you've ever heard of a band called Flaw, I'm shooting photos of them here in like 5 days. So, I'm doing a lot. But on the video game front, and then, shit, this month, I'm traveling to 2 different cities in the U.S. for work. So, beginning of the week. So, I won't be skipping any podcasts, but I will be doing a lot of Steam Deck gaming. So, hopefully I've got the right Steam Deck games. So, we'll see how that goes. Speaking of games, Mandragoria, I've kind of put on pause because I'm saving it. Saving it for the for Steam Deck. Because Steam Deck, that works really well. So that's a good game for that. And then one that I'm going to try on Steam Deck is called Dead Zone Rogue, which actually you saw me playing last night, I think. I think you got here when I was completing a run. Dead Zone Rogue is kind of like a Risk of Rain type game, but in first person. You get not the upgrades aren't wacky, but they do there's lots of similar synergies that there is in Risk of Rain. So like if I had a synergy that was giving me, you know, as like bigger magazines, but as I got past the last half of the magazines, my shots got like 2 times as powerful. Like I synergized everything around. I think on that run, it was all electric damage. But you clear out a room. At the end of the room, there's a reward, and then sometimes enemies drop rewards. And there's permanent upgrades that you're using to unlock on your character. It's in early access, but the roguelite, that's okay because they're just going to be developing the end game, and who knows how long it takes me to get to that. But Dead Zone Rogue is surprisingly... I got it on sale. I want to say I got it for $15. But it's way better than it has any right to be. Forever Skies is also in 1.0. I don't know if you remember me talking about that at all.
Yeah.
It's kind of like...
Yeah.
What was that? Subnautica. It's kind of like Subnautica in the sky.
Yeah, I remember you saying that. Saying some of the mechanics were a little weird, but enjoyable.
Yeah, you can kind of get, like, unlimited materials sitting in a location, and, like, the basics of silica and metal kind of feed into everything else. And it's a survival game, right? So you've got, you know, you got to worry about food and water. Well, you can use metal to create lures to get moths to eat, right? You can use silica to make filters to filter water out of the air. You can use both of those to create little, like, bird bath-looking things that you can use for every time it rains to gather water. So, like, those basic, two basic things, they've kind of tied into basic survival, and those two materials are somewhat plentiful. They used to have, like, this laser you'd put on your blimp that you'd use to collect everything, and now it's a handheld laser. Which I'm wondering if, like, at a certain point I upgrade to the deck laser, but the handheld laser is weird because you shoot it, and then after a certain amount of time, like, it runs out of power, and you have to charge it up by, like, pumping it, right? Kind of like pumping a super soaker or something, which is kind of funny. But you use that for your basic scavenging of everything. But the story seems better pieced together, and the pacing's a lot better done than it was before. You essentially use a scanner to find new objects, right? Like, essentially figure out how to make new stuff on your ship.
Nice. Well, I mean, it sounds fun. I'm just not big into the whole... I was never big into the whole Subnautica gameplay loop. So, I'd imagine you kind of have to be into that gameplay loop to really get into this one.
Yeah, the basic mechanics are very similar, right? Like, you scan things to make discoveries. Those discoveries feed into making yourself have better survivability, right? there are logs that you discover that tell you what's happened, or there are shipwrecks that you find. It's just, it's basically Subnautica in the sky. It's not quite as good, but it is different enough to be very enjoyable and kind of give you a very similar experience. It's about a similar length, too. Instead of going deeper, you're trying to go higher to get above some of the weather. Like, you're having to patch up your ship. There are big creatures. You do go down into the dust. That's what they call it, I think. But you'll find buildings that have elevators that you go down into, and then you have, like, toxic air, and you only have so much air, O2, in your tank, and you're trying to survive to find little bits of information or pieces or research while you're dodging enemies or just basic hazards. Runs a little bit janky. It has frame generation, and I highly, if you have a card that does frame generation, I highly suggest it. I run it, you know, I'm running in 4K on a 4090, and if I'm not running frame generation, I'm running it like 40 FPS. But, you know, that's everything turned all the way up, but I figure I should be able to do everything turned all the way up in a game that does not look like, you know, Doom. Right? So there's some optimization issues, but like the basic gameplay loop is pretty all right. Better than all right. It's fun. If you didn't know, Vampire Survivors has a whole bunch of new stuff. I was trying to figure out how to unlock. There's like 30 new characters, it seems like, now. So if you're really bored, Vampire Survivors just continues to deliver. Kazan is kind of on pause.
I mean, Vampire Survivors great on every platform.
That game just never ends.
Yeah.
Which, nothing wrong with that.
I own that on my Switch. I own it on my PC. I own it on my Xbox. I own it on my phone.
Does that cross save?
Yes. Well, except the Nintendo one, because Nintendo's dicks.
Yeah, there's so much to unlock. That would drive me bananas. I will say that I've gotten really far in Oblivion. I'm surprised you haven't played that, to be honest. Oblivion is still pretty good at 2025.
The only reason I didn't get into it this week was after, you know, getting home, like, you know, around 6 o'clock almost every day. You know, and then having to deal with dinner and yada, yada, yada. You know, by the time we were done, it's like 7, 7:30, and I'm like, or you know, on the days we went to the gym, it's after 8 o'clock at night. Not going to sit down and try to get into this and try to limit myself to only an hour. Because, you know, I loved Oblivion enough. When I get into it, it's going to be a real time.
Yeah, it's definitely, that's what I've been playing off and on all day, honestly. I'm trying to balance this.
Once I get past the first few hours of it, I know I'll probably, you know, go back and forth on it. But I know those first 3-4 hours is probably going to be like a constant decision.
Didn't really. It takes about an hour to get through the intro.
Oh yeah, I know the intro's not that long. I'm just saying, you know, that's just how it. I know me, and I know that's how it's going to flow. I'm not going to want to put it down until I get tired, which is probably going to be like 4 hours. And then after those first few hours are done, I know, you know, I'll be able to sit down and play it in, you know, 45 minute or hours. Okay.
Yeah, the I made the mistake of over-focusing the main quest, and then I got to where it's basically the... I can't remember if it's a point of no return or basically at the point where I'm about to close all the Oblivion Gates, right? Yeah. And I was like, there's so much I still haven't done. I haven't finished the Thieves Guild. I haven't finished the Fire... I haven't finished any of the guilds, right? I just started Dark Brotherhood. And I definitely have not gone through nearly enough dungeons. So I kind of put that quest on hold because I still haven't done Shivering Owls either. So I've got a lot of content left in that game. But I'm having fun with it. Like, I'm level 27 and I started off as a warrior, but I have I have my core skills all maxed out. And or I say core skills, core stats all maxed out. My core skills, I think the only hundreds I have is I have 100 mercantile because, you know, I'm selling shit. And 100 in blade, which is actually really good. And then 100 in restoration because I picked the crusader like default class. If I do it again, which I probably will at some point with mods, I'll go through and redo it so I can do a better spellblade. I was going crusader thinking it would be more of a spellblade, and really I'm kind of like a jack of all trades musician. I'm not a musician. A jack of all trades magician, right? It's still pretty decent, right? Like, the combat's not that great. It's just kind of the exploration part is pretty fun. And, you know, some of the jank is kind of fun. It's still a very decent game. I mean, it's old, but it has a really good fresh coat of paint on it right now. So Oblivion in 2025 is way better than I thought it would be. Not ready to rate it, but... you know, Expedition 33, this is why, like, my focus is split so much, because I'm so busy, but I'm also tackling two huge games, right? Three huge games, Kazan, that, and Expedition 33. Gotten fairly far in that game. That's probably a Game of the Year contender, to be honest with you. And it is not a big studio. That game kind of came out of nowhere. I think I'd been looking forward to it, and then I was like, oh, it's going to be on Game Pass, so I'll just check it out when it comes out on Game Pass. And once I got through just the first part of it, like, the intro is like Last of Us 1 quality. And I notably skipped Last of Us 2 because, you know, we killed off the best character. Don't really want to jump into that discussion because I think everybody that's listened to this long enough knows how I feel about that. But yeah, the Last of Us 1, right, like, had kind of a tearjerker moment. Expedition 33, you see it coming from a bazillion miles away, and it's still pretty well done. It's also one of the best looking games I've played in a very long time. Not just graphics in general, but the art style is really good. Exceptionally good. So, I highly, highly, highly recommend Expedition 33.
Especially for the price of Game Pass.
Yeah, and also it's $50 if you don't have Game Pass. It's not $70, it's not $80, it's $50. But yeah, if you have the funds, if you have the means, if you want to just check it out on Game Pass, I mean, right now, if you played nothing else, you could get Game Pass for 2 months on PC for $30, right? And then play both Expedition 33 and Oblivion. And more than get your money's worth. And you can do mods on Game Pass if you really want to go that far. But, yeah, it's both those, like, Game Pass is definitely delivering this month. But honestly, I don't have much more in the way of games. Do we want to take a quick break?
Yeah, let's take a quick break. I've got a few stories.
All right, we'll be back. And we're back.
Woohoo!
It's been a game light week. I guess I've dabbled in stuff. Jason hasn't gotten a chance to dabble. We have things, though, coming up on the horizon. We've got the launch of the Switch 2, which I know at least one person who is not on this podcast is excited for. It would be our DM, our Dungeon Master. Outside of that, is that anything that you're going to dive into at all, Jason? For your kids?
For what? Sorry, I missed that.
Switch 2?
For reading. Look. Probably not for a long time.
Wait till your wife finds you at the bargain store.
I mean, here's the thing. It's going to be $150 to $200 more expensive in the U.S. than the Switch Plus. Right? And there's not... And I'm not a big fan of buying... Ever since the Wii came out, I'm not a big fan of buying a Nintendo console in the first 1 to 2 years. Mostly because there's not that much of a library to go from. Because the amount of third-party titles they have are pretty low.
Yeah, it's kind of slim to none.
Yeah. So, and... I mean, they're making it even harder with adding the whole mouse gimmick to the Joy-Cons, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I'm just not going to be an early adopter of the Switch 2. Can't do it. Won't do it. I mean, the Switch was like 5 years old by the time I finally got one. Yeah, I'm just not going to do it. Even if the new Metroid Prime is there within the next 12 months, I won't. I just won't. So.
Like, that's the only thing that I'm interested in, to be honest with you. And, like, it looks cool, but, like, holy shit, I can't deal with the price tag. For just that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And it's going to be a hefty price tag, no matter how we cut it. Plus, I mean, Nintendo just keeps proving over and over again how, like, anti-consumer they are. You know, like, they updated their terms of service this week. That in a way that basically says they'll suspend your account and brick your Switch if you, let's see, they'll suspend your account if you attempt to lease, rent, sublicense, publish, modify, copy, adapt, translate, reverse engineer, decompile, or disassemble all or any portion of the Nintendo account services without Nintendo's written consent or otherwise expressly permitted by applicable law. So in other words, they will suspend your Nintendo account if you even loan a cart that doesn't have a game on it.
Yeah, because you're just buying a software license, right?
Yeah, let's say you try to loan that to a friend. That could be enough for them to suspend your account. They added this time around, in addition, they could actually remotely brick your Switch if you attempt to copy, modify, reverse engineer, lease, rent, decompile, disassemble, distribute, offer for sale, or create derivative works of any portion of the Nintendo account services, or bypass, modify, decrypt, defeat, tamper with, or otherwise circumvent any of the other functions or protections of Nintendo account services, including through the use of any hardware or software that could cause a Nintendo account service to operate other than in accordance with its documented or intended use, obtained to install or use any other unauthorized copies of Nintendo account services or software, or exploit the Nintendo account services in any manner other than to use them in accordance with applicable documentation and intended use in each case.
Can you think of a practical way that any of that stuff would happen without outright doing something you shouldn't be doing?
Well, the biggest thing would be, you know, like loaning your carts to a friend.
Oh, that's fair.
You could end up inadvertently, you know, like trying to use software tools on PC, try to like preserve your game files physically, like on a hard drive. Which is basically what you have to do on a Nintendo Switch to save outside of paying for Nintendo's fucking service to be able to cloud save. That's your only real way to back anything up. Well, now, because they don't make an official software to do that, that third-party software that you could use to back up your game files onto your PC, Nintendo could say, nope, your Switch is not there. As we noticed, you copied your game files to the PC.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's... They're basically trying to wall garden you into doing everything the Nintendo way, and I just think that's fucking despicable. And
we're gonna get something that's got
anti-consumer.
And we're gonna get something that's two generations behind, like on top of that, and it's gonna play first party games and a handful of third party games, and then the third party games that it plays mostly are going to be, you know, indie games that you could get on Steam or on Game Pass.
Yep. Because, like, there's no reason why Nintendo has to use, like, a three-generation-old NVIDIA chip in the Switch, right? Like, can't use a current-generation chip? Make our money really worth it? Or if you're trying to keep profit margin, go with AMD's current or last gen bubble chip, like what's going in all these handheld PCs, and design your Nintendo platform around that. Is that too much to ask? So, I don't know. Nintendo just keeps making odd choices, and I can't. I'm only going to buy one if I get it on the cheap. Sorry.
Yeah, it'd have to be really, really cheap for me. Like I said, for mobile, I'm pretty sold on Steam Deck. Having that option is amazing. It's the customization for that is part of it too, right? And just having so many different choices on what I want to do on mobile gaming. But I never play it at home. Right, I don't really do anything other than just use it for travel, and I do a fair amount of travel, so it's actually come into play quite a bit.
That's a much better option. Also, you know, continuing the Nintendo fuckery, The latest part of I'm about to try to explain legalese to you, like your like you're a 5 year old. Nintendo recently filed and received a third U.S. patent that was clearly designed to work for Nintendo to make additional assertions against PalWorld. And by assertions, I mean try to accuse them of patent breach. And they've filed a fourth one that is pending approval. And apparently the Nintendo's patent attorneys have already been hinted at that the application will be granted. Basically the what they're filed patents for they've basically filed additional patents concerning the smooth switching of writing objects as claimed by Nintendo, an additional patent in regards to collecting characters, and then can't find detail on this fourth one. Dying.
Well, dang it.
Not seeing it. Maybe it's a lot further down.
You're killing me.
I know, right? Yeah, I can't find detail on the fourth one yet. So, either way, they're looking at having four different patents recently approved within the U.S. that just make it harder for them to easier for them to sue Pocket Bear. Which I think is just kind of bullshit. I mean, yes, I know the game is has a lot of extremely close similarities, but it's also like they're more satiring it, right? So like, chill out, Nintendo.
Well,
So I think we're just like, I think we're 3 to 4 months away from Nintendo actually suing Pocket Bear, which they've not done yet.
Well, there is a new Doom on the horizon. I will be playing some of that before we cast next. Obviously, I love Doom.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the reviewers are a little bit divided, and so I will say that the people that I've been kind of like alternate sourcing my reviews lately, right? Fightin' Cowboy is one that I frequent, as he does a lot of Dark Souls instructional videos, but he also has not let me down on a game recommendation. He's a big fan of it because it's a little bit melee focused and up in your face focused than prior Doom games, right? And Mr. Gerstmann, who used to be part of the golden age of Giant Bomb, I don't know what Giant Bomb is nowadays, but it's not Giant Bomb. As in, none of the original, it got bought out, and none of the original cast is there. Gerstmann, you know, is a founder, he's not there, and, you know, Vinny and the rest are not there anymore, so it's not really Giant Bomb. But anyways, Gerstmann reviewed it yesterday with a solid 2 thumbs up as well. And may not like everything that Gerstmann likes. However, that guy is as objective as it gets when it comes to video game-ass video games. And he likes it better than Eternal. So that's good news for me, because Eternal is the only Doom that I have not beat. It's because I just couldn't wrap my hand around staying airborne or in dash mode essentially the entire time. It's just too fast-paced for my old ass, to be honest with you. And this is a slowed-down Doom. Like, it's kind of very much a game focused on interacting dynamically with what the game's throwing at you, but in a slowed-down way, right? Like, it have, like, colored projectiles that you can parry back at the enemy. You're not just killing stuff to get all of your ammo back. There's a lot of, like, parry and counter stuff. Like, it wants you to get up in the face of enemies and just obliterate them. And I'm here for it. It's a very chonky Doom. And chonky Doom is what I like. Like, Doom 2016 is a little bit faster paced than I liked, but it was still very good. I'm hoping that I like it even better. But yeah, Doom is on the horizon. It's literally 5 days away. 4 days away, kind of the midnight release. There is a leaker, so take this with a huge grain of salt, but a very famous leaker for Valve called named Tyler McVicker. He's done a lot of Valve rumors. He's kind of hit and miss, but he said that Half-Life 3 is playable from beginning to end, and thinks there will be an announcement soon for Half-Life 3. I'll believe it when I see it. But we've been looking forward to a Half-Life 3 for the entire life of this podcast. So, like,
Half-Life 3 is never going to happen. Not while Gabe's there.
I don't know. I think the time's right. Like, there's been so many game fails, right, lately. Basically, the major releases aren't landing for the most part, right? Like, there's definitely some shining stars out there, but the frequent Michael transactions, as I like to say, right? A lot of microtransactions going on, a lot of boosts in single-player games, a lot of goofy-ass product placement, a lot of focus on PvPvE, right? Like, this is the first Souls game that I'm not excited about because it's like I'm not going to buy it day one. I'm going to wait to see how people play it solo. If I see that it's viable solo, I might pick it up, but I'm not getting it day one. And this is the first Miyazaki game that I'm not getting day one. In that sense, I've been getting Miyazaki games since. Miyazaki. Yeah, it is Miyazaki, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've been getting Miyazaki games since Dark Souls 1, day one. So I'm not doing it, and that's a big thing for me. Yeah, and they have two PvE games, essentially. Not that there wasn't a PvP element in the other games, right? There definitely is. But it was focused on the single-player experience. And yeah,
there was also none of that live service bullshit.
Right, there's a whole strategy to kind of coming up with your custom build. And I'm just not seeing. You're leveling up very fast in Nightreign. And so, like, that's another game that's, like, feels like it fell prey to that, right? Like, Elden Ring's a fucking masterpiece. And then they're doing this, and they're doing that Bloodborne-inspired PvP game on Switch, which feels like, you know, it's bait to buy a Switch, basically. May do well, right? And then a year or so later, it'll come out, and then we'll see if it is worth a damn to play on PC. I'm sure with it being for Switch 2, it'll play fine on the Steam Deck. But, yeah, like, just those trends, right? Like, there's been a lot of bad writing. There's been a lot of disjointed gameplay. Like, I think, like, since... Like, I think we can blame the dev cycle of COVID, like, really interrupting stuff for a couple of years, stuff with really long tails, but I think you have all these games with these huge-ass budgets, right, that just don't come to fruition. They have these massive teams, right? Like, new Assassin's Creed game, I assume, is doing kind of okay, but it still doesn't feel very Assassin's Creed-y, right? Like, you got one main character that's a bulldog that's very up-in-your-face combat, and then a sneaky character, which seems like a weird design choice, right? I haven't really bought a Ubisoft game or an Assassin's Creed Day One game since Black Flag. Like, it's just, to me, it's really lost the plot. And so, like,
and then you got
Dragon Age, which was
Bethesda,
like,
still after all these years being very much Bethesda, right? Like, Fallout 76 had a bunch of issues when it launched.
It's better, but like,
Starfield had its issues when it launched, and with as much time as they spent developing Starfield, like, there's no excuse for that shit.
Yeah, and I've come to realize that there's an element of cope for me wanting Bethesda to be old Bethesda, right? So, like, Starfield was aggressively, had some moments of brilliance, but was kind of aggressively bloated, right? Fallout 76, when it came out, was below average. And it's like a B-tier game right now, right? Like, it's good enough, but
it feels kind of like
you're not doing a lot.
I feel like the main problem is with a lot of studios anymore, and I think it's publisher-driven. Publisher and distributor-driven.
Well,
is that it kind of feels like it's buzzword and idea heavy, and the writing is all secondary.
I heard somebody, you know, listening to tons and tons of podcasts while they do other things, had mentioned something as an idea that kind of resonated with me. And a lot of other things that they talked about didn't. They said maybe, like, the primary reason that, like, games are not as doing as well as they were before is because they're chasing earnings calls, right? Like, games are, the companies themselves are trying to outdo themselves from the year prior, right? So they chase these trends, but these have such long, and they didn't get into this part, but I was thinking, I was like, but games have such, on these, like, AAA games, they have such a long dev cycle that they're chasing a trend that by the time it comes out may not be a trend anymore, right? So they might think that they have lightning in a bottle, and then they make this live, you know, this live persistent service shooter, and the market's completely saturated, right? Like, Sony's done that twice and flopped twice in the last year doing that. Because, you know, essentially everybody plays Call of Duty and Apex Legends at this point, right? If that's the game. And those games do gangbusters, and even Apex Legends kind of dying. And then Destiny, right? Like, Destiny kind of had to turn a few things around to kind of become relevant again, and still quite a few people playing Destiny. But those are, like, exceptions to the rule now, right? People kind of settle into that game that, like, the kind of gamer that really dives into that stuff does that, and kind of exclusively does it, kind of like a World of Warcraft player. And so they're not going to jump ship to a new game typically, right? And then the games that are doing really well right now are video game ass video games, right? I don't often talk politics, and I'm not really going to talk politics too much, but in general, a lot of games right now kind of feel like bad Christian music, right? Like, and I use that very specifically in that the message is ahead of the product, right? So,
yes.
And whether you agree or not, like, the product shouldn't be shaped around the message. It should be the other way
around.
The product should be shaped around the gameplay, and then if some of that stuff kind of happens naturally, then cool, right? So, like, Baldur's Gate, good example of being a very inclusive game, but not making it about being inclusive, and it was good because it just let anybody do whatever they want, however they want, right? A very open-ended game, and it was written well, and it played well. Like, they spent
that
2 years.
That's the thing, is they spent the time writing a story that they wanted to tell in that setting before they really started crafting, like, the quests and the questing system around the story.
They spent,
you know, and that's something you can do without. You know, and you can still build, you know, start developing and building assets while the stories being written, but at least focus story first.
Well, or gameplay first. And it, well, they focused mechanics more than you realize. So for the first 2 years that was in early access, because it was in early access for quite a while, people could play Act 1 over and over and over again, and they captured player data of what players were doing and the options they were taking to solve the different scenarios, and expanded on some of that stuff based on player feedback, both organically and inorganically, right? So they looked at their player data, plus they looked at their message boards to see what people wanted to do, and it was the most authentic D&D experience in a video game ever, right? Which is why it's great. And not enough companies are doing that, right? Like, they didn't have to hit a quarterly earnings call because it was just Larian developing that game, right? They didn't have to release it by a certain date because they were just working on making it right. And that's why that game 2 years later is still relevant, is because it's one of a few games that's just good. Oblivion's doing gangbusters right now, off and on Game Pass, right? Like, it's a metric fuckload of people playing it on Steam right now, as well as Game Pass. And why is that? It's not a perfect game, right? Like, it's a video game ass video game, and it reminds people of what games used to be, like, all about gameplay. There's a main story, but, like, half the appeal of Oblivion is just doing dumb shit, right? And building crazy builds with your character. My character has... He's maxed out in everything but magic combat at this point, right? He's a professional archer, but also a sword and mace guy, and also a paladin all at the same time. And it just lets you do things, and some of the bugs are still there, right? But the game looks really good, and it plays on modern hardware. It's got ray tracing. It looks fantastic. It still has some, like, weird-ass looking elves. But, it's good because it's just an open-ended game. It's a video game first with a decent story. But it's just a video game-ass video game. And we haven't had a video game-ass video game in a long time.
Yeah.
Clair Obscur Expedition 33. That game's a masterclass game. And that was developed... We were talking about it last night. And this is anecdotal, so I don't know where the source is. We were talking around the table, and one of the guys at our table said, yeah, that game was essentially made by developers that were working on other projects that wanted to make a purely game-focused project. It's a turn-based RPG, much in the vein of old Final Fantasy, like circa Final Fantasy X, just with some new flavor to it, right? Like, you have a jump, you have a dodge, you have a parry. And then there's some additional mechanics, so real-time mechanics while you're doing that. If you don't want to do that stuff, you can actually have the game do it for you if you really want it to. But the the combos that you can create with your team to get cool destruction is definitely there. There's a lot of experimentation. The game looks amazing. I'm super surprised at how good this game looks from a development company of around 35 employees. It's also doing something that Final Fantasy is not doing, and that's, and Persona, right? I know there's a lot of people that love Persona. We're having this conversation, but, you know, I think had I gotten to Persona when I was a teenager, I probably would like it a little bit more, but I don't relate to the teenage protagonist, right? And all except for the, Final Fantasy that takes place in a very medieval time setting. All those characters are coming of age, right? Like, there was the one that came out a few years ago where it's the prince, right? That's kind of coming of age and kind of, learning that he has to be responsible, right? Well, Expedition 33 is about a bunch of guys in their 30s. It's about a bunch of adults. And, there's some really relatable conflict, right? And the level of maturity of the characters is definitely on point as well. There's some goofy-ass video game-ness, right? Like, you can get some stupid outfits for your characters, and everybody can look ridiculous while you're playing the game and in cutscene. But it's a very dark game. The art style is very reminiscent of something like Silent Hill meets a Souls game in a turn-based RPG, and somehow very French at the same time, because it's a French company. It's the first game, too. And it's doing gangbusters. That game sold, like, 2 million copies. And it's on Game Pass, and it's, like, under $50 still. There's a story out right now, right? So, like, what's the price of the new price of Nintendo games? Do you remember?
70 or 80, depending on
right
title, publisher, etc.
And then you got the newest Bethesda game, Doom, launching at $70, right? Like, it looks like it's going to be a good game. But, again, case in point, $70 price point's pretty high. That Expedition 33 game is $50, and it is a long-ass game, like a 60-hour game at $50. That blows away everything else out that's coming out of the water that's coming out AAA, right?
Yeah.
Like, games industry just doesn't understand. Like, it just sold 2 million copies at $50. They're doing A-OK. That's $100 million gross, right? With very low overhead.
Everybody's starved so much that the Oblivion remaster is already the third best-selling game of 2025 in the U.S.
Yeah, and it's on Game Pass. That's what I keep coming back to.
Yeah.
It's on Game Pass, and it sold that well. Like, video game industry needs to get their shit together. But, like, that's a thing, right? When you talk about, like, somebody had posted a story that GTA 6 has been in development longer than, like, 3 GTAs put together. So, like, GTA 5 came out in, like, what, 2013?
Yeah.
Really, like, we're at 12. My dog. Hold on. I'm so sorry. Miss Lola. I'm going to need you to touch that deaf voice of yours.
Yeah. Yeah. GTA 5 came out in 2013.
Yeah.
And they've... don't remember, has Rockstar more than...
They did Red Dead Redemption 2 in between, right?
Yeah, Red Dead Redemption 2 came out after, like, that.
But, 2018 or 2019. Red Dead
Redemption 2 is...
it's a different studio, isn't it?
Also... a old ass fucking game, came out in 2018.
Yeah, that's 7 years ago now.
But yes, that was also primarily led by Rockstar North.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So from 2018, I guess you could really say about 2019. On is Grand Theft Auto 6's, like, development time. Now, I understand COVID's in there, and that probably adds a...
yeah, but they were surviving, you know,
12 to 16 months worth of very slow development time.
Right, but they've been surviving on microtransactions from GTA 5 Online this whole time, basically.
Yeah. But also, like, Rockstar's a subsidiary of Take-Two, right? So, I guess it doesn't necessarily need to put out a game every 2 or 3 years, but you would think it would be.
Yeah, there is a possibility right now, we're talking about this, that there is talks about a $100 GTA 6.
That is...
That's insane.
Yeah.
Somebody, you know, there's been a lot of people, and I'm not an economist, right? There are people who talk about, like, how expensive some of the Nintendo games were in the 90s. But people also had a whole lot more disposable income. The cost of living versus what you're making, right, was drastically different.
Yeah, groceries for sure were a hell of a lot cheaper throughout the time.
Groceries are cheaper just right before COVID. They've doubled since before COVID. I know people say like 33% on average, but I could tell you what I personally buy went from, and again, this is just me, right? And you've got many children's and a family, but me and a girl that was, you know, my stepkid was living with me, right? We were spending $60 to $70 a week for the two of us on like healthy food. And that was the two of us. And that for just the one of me, it's about $110 to $120 getting really basic stuff. I used to get a steak every week. I don't now because it feels wasteful because, you know, that feels like that's went up by like 70%. So I don't have that. I have disposable income because I've gotten a lot of raises where I work, right? I've worked in the same place for a very long time. And have moved up a lot, but like the cost of my base living has went up astronomically in the last 6 years. So like from where I was before, total bills plus groceries a month is like, it's going to sound crazy because my rent's not what everybody else's is, but we're both homeowners, right? Cause we got houses a long time ago. Was like $1,300 a month. And right now I'm sitting at about $2,300 a month with groceries plus bills. And I got a mortgage before housing went up. So that's saying something. Like that's a pretty big jump. So, you know, and if I was making less, like I don't really want to spend $100 on one video game. That seems crazy.
Yeah, it does. But I mean, it's been a long time since the cost of games really adjusted for any sort of say inflation or increased development cost, etc.
Well,
I just gotta say, if you're gonna charge me $90 for a 30 or 40 hour game, it better be fucking perfect.
I think I put more than
there,
I think
there
I put
better about not be a flaw.
Yeah, I period. Think I put about 60 hours into it, but that's releasing more than a year away. So May 26, 2026, right? And Devolver, which if you don't know Devolver released Hotline Miami, The Messenger, Enter the Gungeon, Cult of the Lamb, etc., right? Is also getting pretty chaotic right now and has decided they're going to release a game the same day. They don't know what game it's going to be, but they're going to release a game the same day that GTA 6 comes out. GTA 6 is $100. I will wait for a sale and I will buy the Devolver game. Just out of protest on the price. Again, $100 is just ridiculous. We've got a lot going on news-wise that we're not able to report on yet because we've got PAX East going on right now. And it doesn't end until tomorrow, so we will see if there's anything that's announced. The PAX releases the last 3 years, though, have not been what it has been in prior years. For a long time, I've wanted to take you and Rusty to a PAX, and I haven't been to a PAX since me and Holly went back in 2018, so it's been 7 years at this point. And pre-COVID, I hate to keep using COVID as an excuse, but like something just changed about PAX, right? Like people aren't going to that to release games. They're doing a lot of stuff, a lot of digital releases. We've got the Xbox, you know, the Microsoft Showcase that'll happen next month, which is rumored that a Fallout 3 remake will be announced, which course I'll pick up, but and we've got the PC gaming show coming out on June 8th. They'll have Ubisoft, so meh, but Devolver Digital, Failblader Games, and Astrological are some of the first partners confirmed. More excited about Devolver always does their own thing too, which is kind of weird they're doing this. Like anytime there was an E3, there'd be a separate Devolver stream, which I kind of like them for that. They're always pretty funny. But we'll be getting a lot of announcements soon. I think as it gets closer, just to make sure that we stay a little bit relevant, I think that we will just announce what's coming out on Switch in case you're interested. I know one big thing is the Final Fantasy VII Remake Trilogy is going to come to Switch as well. So if you missed out on that and you're waiting for it to come to Nintendo, they're going to do the whole thing on Switch. Which I don't think that they have three yet, do they?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, we were talking about that last night, too. It's like, that was a really cool thing, except I hated the combat.
Yeah. You know,
but the there are so many years in between releases for Final Fantasy VII Remake, because they decided to split it in three parts. They pulled a Peter Jackson, right? Instead of releasing The Hobbit as one movie, they did it in three separate movies. Well, Final Fantasy's like, well, we're going to add some content and split this between three releases.
Which was stupid.
Yeah, because you forget about what you did last, and it's been a long time.
You know, I understand if they were developing it all concurrently, and let's say they released part one, and then like 8 to 12 months later released part two, and then part three, right? But no, we've been on this for, God, what? Like, almost 8 years now? When did part one come out?
I'm actually having a hard time finding it.
Because the first part was called Rebirth, right?
Yeah.
No. The first part was called Remake. So that came out in 2020. They announced everything like 2017. So yeah, it's been like
eight years. Yeah, and then last year was part two, right? And then we don't have part three, right?
Yeah, no, we don't have part three. Part three doesn't even have a release date yet. Which is ridiculous. Like, there's no reason this should have taken so much time.
Yeah, like, I'm having a hard time, like, putting this all together. I'd have to sit here and dive in for 20 minutes and figure it all out. But, yeah, I guess they'll be waiting for part 3 like the rest of us, and it's rumored that there's going to be a part 4, so I guess we're going to be remaking Final Fantasy VII for, like, 15 years. We don't have new ideas around here. This is a little bit hypocritical because the Oblivion remaster is so good, but
yeah, but the Oblivion remaster is okay. This is where I am going to give Bethesda some props, right? They didn't try to remake the entire game in Unreal 5. They basically just used Unreal 5 like a skin for improved textures to update, you know, like the controls and some of the animation, etc.
Yeah, but and
the
they,
bulk of the original game is still there on the back end, right?
It almost feels like you could toggle it back and forth.
And that is the smart way to do it.
Yeah, right? It's the only thing. I think there's like five or six basic changes. It's a big change to the leveling system. They still have the level enemies, which is goofy as shit, but whatever. But yeah, it's how you remembered it, right? Like Oblivion was a good looking game before when it came out in 06. And this is also an equally good looking game to come out in 2020. Like, it's a good looking game. Those Oblivion gates, man, those look cool as shit.
Happy they don't look like a fiery asshole. Though.
No, they do not look like a fiery asshole. They are very good looking.
Which, I mean, we all thought the fiery assholes were wild back then, right?
You need to play it, man. This week, that's your assignment. You need to play some Oblivion. It's badass.
I do. The only other thing I had was the man, the FTC, lost its appeal of the judge's ruling to allow Microsoft's acquisition of Activision Blizzard. You know, almost a year after Microsoft just said, yeah, we don't care about your appeal. We're going to do it anyway. So originally last summer, when judge ruled that, to allow it, the FTC tried to request a preliminary injunction to prevent the merger, and then they immediately filed an appeal. And the appeals court has denied the FTC's request of the original judge's ruling. So, yeah, there you go. Don't get too big for your britches, FTC. Some things are worth letting go. You know, I know they were probably doing it on the grounds of, well, this shit become like a megacorp, you know, development dump. But I mean, Sony has acquired just as many developers as Microsoft has. I mean, at this point, it's not necessarily a monopoly. It is getting close to a duopoly, but yeah, it's still pretty fair. And nobody's bought EA. Like, EA's sitting out there giant with, you know, some like 20 odd different developers sitting underneath it. So.
Yeah, I mean, and then you got other games, right, that are flourishing, like Warhammer 40,000, right? 40K got a part 2 release, and they're doing more updates for their Horde mode. Like, and that game's legitimately good. It is a very concise and exciting experience. It's a good game. Some other things that are dying that are, I guess we should have saw coming. Skype. So Skype started in 2003 and is dead. So there is
We knew it was going to die when they did Teams, right?
Yeah.
That wasn't.
I think.
That writing was just on the wall. It was just when were they going to end official support for it, basically, and shut down the servers?
Yeah, and it's at a point right now where, like, there's just better options. Like, Discord is a better option. That's where a lot of people move to, right? So, Skype's dead. A lot of gaming journals sites are dying, too. Like, Polygon. Polygon is moving to Valnet. Valnet is, they own Fextra Life. I don't know if you know what Fextra Life is, but Fextra with an F. Is a group of guys that go through and beat the fuck out of RPGs and then make guides for it. And they also do some reviews. I couldn't tell you who the main guy is. I hear his voice all the time. I've been watching their videos for, it feels like, 5 or 6 years. But they got bought out. And just about everybody left the company. So, main editor left from Polygon. And most of the staff writers left from Polygon. But I think, again, not going to wax too political, but, like, Polygon used to be a really good website to kind of look for reviews on games, right? And they'd review, like, technical stuff, and you'd almost get, like, information in a way. What's the name of that site that does the, like, video comparisons and stuff? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I just...
Anyway, they would do stuff like, you know...
It's not coming to my recall brain.
But they would do stuff like hardware reviews, right? And I felt like between them and Ars Technica, you could get, like, really good hardware reviews on stuff. And then get really technical reviews sometimes of games, right? It seemed like they had a really talented staff. And then somewhere along the way, like, it just got into mostly social commentary on games and less about reviews. And I think because they were very, very much only on one side of social commentary, you know, like, won't even dive into where I'm at with all that stuff, but in general, right, like, I'm an individual with very, very diverse set of ideas that don't always align with any side. And that's, like, gaming journalism's not where I'm going to go for some of that stuff, right? Like, I'm going to go to different political websites to look at that information. And
yep.
It's also so blasted on social media and has been the last several years. It's so divisive. Like, it's very exhausting. And games are a form of escapism. And all I really want you to do with reviewing a game is tell me if it's a fun game, right? And not tell me how it reflects on culture per se. A handful of games, right? Like, that makes a difference. But, you know, I didn't mind them when they do the games as art kind of stuff. But the just incessant social commentary being even tied to reviews, like, just made me drift. Like, and I basically kind of stopped reading them probably 5 or 6 years ago. Occasionally there'd be a story that popped up and I would look at the review and be like, oh, well, again, social commentary is woven into that review and that's why it's reviewed this way. Because it didn't line up exactly how this person thinks outside of video games that's reviewing this, so... Maybe I take that with a grain of salt and look at somebody who's a little bit more objective. And it's like them and Kotaku are very similar in that regard, right? Like, Gizmodo is another thing that's kind of like that, where it feels... It's gotten really tacky and hokey in a way. And it just... We've gotten to the point where, like, ACG, I'm just hoping that he fucking reviews something because he's pretty objective, right? Gotten to the point where I'm literally just watching Let's Plays of stuff or finding streamers that like games very similar to me to see what they like, right? Going to independent, you could call it, not really journalists, but like there's a guy I follow on YouTube called Splattercat, right? Like, I don't mind blasting that guy. He's way more popular than us, but he reviews like a different indie game like every 2 or 3 days or demo or whatever and kind of goes through his experience. And does a Let's Play of it, so you can watch him for 30 or 40 minutes, and it's very entertaining because he's a pretty funny guy. But I get a lot more from that. PC Gamer still hasn't been tarnished. Occasionally they have something that's a little snippy, but for the most part, read a lot of PC Gamer. And then just honestly, guys, we look at Reddit a lot for finding trends.
A lot.
Because they're just, if you remember, when we first started the show, it was Rock, Paper, Shotgun, Kotaku, and a couple of other sites that we sourced everything from. Because Rock, Paper, Shotgun's been around for a billion years.
A lot of Game Informer back then, too.
Yeah, Game Informer, too. We'd find stories on Game Informer to kind of, like, handpick stuff through that. And none of that stuff's that reliable anymore. Well, Game Informer died and came back, but hopefully maybe with the rebirth, especially not being chained to GameStop, that'll free them up to be a little bit more objective, too. Sometimes Game Informer just felt like an ad for a video game. But IGN like is so hit and miss.
IGN, it depends on the writer.
It only got like 3,000 writers, right? So, and they've branched out to try to, like, you know, they're doing a lot of shit TV and movie review stuff. So it's like a media review site now, right? Like, it's huge. But it's pretty hit and miss. And so I take all of their, like, scores with a grain of salt.
Yeah, it's like ever since G4 died, IGN just, like, became, like, the basically culture and nerd review site.
Yeah, but but again, like you just said, like, there's probably 100 reviewers that work for IGN, right? And some of them are very much looking for the cultural message and everything before they write a review, and then some of them are pretty objective. And so you really kind of have to pick and choose as you go through stuff, right? Pretty sure that they were another one of those that, like, really... Like, again, I said this when we did our Game of the Year, like, Dragon Age Veilguard, like, disappointed the fuck out of me, because it was a very generic game. It was message ahead of gameplay, but also they didn't do a good job on the gameplay. Like, if the gameplay had been better, and the game loop had been better, like, I might have even overlooked that stuff if it was really good. And it's the worst Dragon Age by a country mile. And art style, too, is a big factor at that. Like, even, like, not enough people were talking about, you know, that were just people that just wanted to dunk on it. And that's not where I was at, right? Like, I actually bought the game. I'm one of the people that actually bought that game. But something I'd noticed when I was playing Expedition 33 is you go through the world before you hit a rest, your characters get more beat up, right? So they've been doing a battle. They'll have, like, dirt all over their face. And then you get through a really tough battle and your guys might have blood all over their clothes and their face. And they look really beat up. That was something I really liked about Dragon Age Origins, and even Dragon Age 2 and 3, like, kind of kept that dark art style where it's kind of grim fantasy, right? And you would get through a really tough encounter, you'd be in the middle of a cutscene, and your guy is just, like, just covered in blood, right? Like, all over. And you destroy an enemy, and it's like a gore explosion. It was glorious. And that was always Dragon Age. And this Dragon Age was very cartoony looking, right? Like, very smooth, very well-rendered graphics, right? But the Darkspawn aren't scary anymore. They're very cartoony. And there's a couple of monster designs that were pretty good. There's a couple of level designs that look really neat in that game. But just in general, like, it just tone and setting and everything was just off. It was just like a completely different company made that game, right? BioWare in name only. Dragon Age team in name only. And, the lead developer got let go after that game. Like, it did half of what it did. And there was a lot of game journal sites because it had the right social message, right? That were just like 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10. Return to form. Like, you can go through and count, like, how many times somebody said return to form. This looks like they got the same APB in it, or not APB, but like they got the same AP article, right? And they all used that in their review. And I was just like, this seems kind of sus. But I got sucked in because it was a Dragon Age title and I got baited into nostalgia and bought that game and I didn't finish it. I got about a third of the way through the game and just the pacing and the gameplay and the quest design and all the characters feel really flat. Nobody felt really good. One of my favorite characters is just an NPC. One of the other favorite characters is, again, another NPC. And it just, I don't know, it's just disjointed. So, like, I'm hoping that some of these things, like crashing and being rebuilt, kind of leads to people being a little bit more objective. So we can get back to what we like, which is just understanding video games. And another person, if you want to just watch somebody that I really like that is a gold standard in reviews, is freaking Jeff Gerstmann. He literally just has a YouTube channel, and he's a pro, right? Guy can talk for 3 hours weekly all by himself. He does a whole podcast all by himself. Andy streams, and that guy's older than us, and he's a fucking pro. And, that's somebody I trust very well, because he picks apart a game for what it is first. He has his social commentary on some of that stuff, too, but, like, he's always looking first at how good the game is, and that's what I appreciate about him. Rant off. But this is where we're at. Speaking of, like, weird things, though, there's a Star Wars tie-in right now with Destiny. It's called Destiny Renegades. Look the trailer. I'm sure if you need to know more about this, just listen to the TVGP, because Boston will probably be all over this. But there is a several items, right, straight out of Star Wars, including a lightsaber that will be coming to Destiny 2. But also, like, the really long sniper rifle from, like, the, you know, like the, oh, God, I'm an idiot. What's the sand people? Like, the sand people sniper rifle? Like, that looks like that's in the game. And a handful of other things. Right. I don't know what they're doing with that, but it's called Renegades, and it draws inspiration from Star Wars. I have no idea what that is. I'm not a Destiny guy anymore and haven't been in about 10 years, so we shall see. I'm pretty out of news. Do you have anything that I've missed?
Nope, I think we pretty much covered it. So I think with that, guys, you can find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and Twitter.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/realtiltcast. And search for us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Look forward to Doom coverage next week and PAX East coverage next week. But also find friends of the show. You've got Picking Up the Pixels or the Pupcast and TVGP.TV. They do amazing things. And cover all things Destiny with that. It's the end of the show.
All right. Peace.